Elysium Restoration and Design specializes in basements, kitchens, bathrooms, and home additions. Elysium has a track record of completing jobs on time and on budget, whether it's a basic remodel or your dream project. The owner, Jason, started with an idea and a pickup truck, and over the past 20 years, he's seen every type of job there is and continues to provide high-quality work to his customers. Visit online at erdstl.com or find Elysium on Facebook. Elysium Restoration and Design. Trust is one of the things they build well.
On this side of the law, on that side of the law, who is right, who is wrong, who is for and who's against the law?
Well, you see, I feel sorry for the people who aren't able to listen, right? Yeah, the frustrating thing is our whole internet, not just ours, people all around the area, is down because of Charter. Charter's down. And what's frustrating is you can't tell the people who can't hear why they can't hear, because they can't hear it. So we put it on the Facebook page. Hopefully people go to facebook.com/AM and the PM, and they'll see we are waiting. And any moment, we should have our internet back. But without it, this is bundled, so we have no phone service. But we do have Scott Sherman. And, Scott, this is going to be very interesting, because this whole segment is about taking calls from people who have legal issues, and we can't take any calls.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
But, as we have done many times, we can always morph
this. Now, you
this.
Get, unlike the other place, yeah, you have to
I
be
can
more,
go right into it.
Because we got these nice, yeah.
I'm not used to being in a nice place like this.
No. Nobody is. None of us. Do you know Woody Woodburn?
I met him, and Tim's doing a fantastic job. I've been listening since Monday. Great news at the top of the hour.
I agree.
And a great contributor to this program.
Thank you.
I agree. I absolutely agree. Now, he's going to be even a bigger contributor, because I don't know if you heard before the break, he was sharing with us his DWI issue. He's had four. And he has, what's the official name of the device in your car you have to blow in?
It's an interlock ignition device.
That's correct.
Okay. The reason, and by the way, I admire the fact that you are willing to talk about it and say that it's not something you'll ever be proud of and you're ashamed and embarrassed by it, because I think it lets people know that, yeah, you didn't make this mistake once or twice or four times. You did it.
I'm lucky not to be in jail. I'm incredibly lucky that I am not sitting in jail instead of sitting in this studio.
How long? 9 years you have to have that device.
It was a 10-year. When I got my license back in January of this year, I literally stood in front of a judge and
10-year denial.
And they gave me a 10-year denial, and he gave me what's called a limited driving privilege, an LDP, and it lasts until January. It says on there January of 2027.
Now, were you an Illinois resident or Missouri?
Missouri.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, how do you know there won't be a fifth DWI?
Well, for two reasons. Number one is, when I stood in front of him and re-entered my plea in January, I had to go through a 15-month, real rigorous DUI court, alternative court program, which, in fact, the young lady next door who writes on my cups, she was also in that program as well. And you know, St. Louis County is the only jurisdiction in the state of Missouri that offers this program, offers the opportunity for people who have been charged with a felony to go through a 15-month, very intensive program where you have to call a drop line every day and you have to determine whether or not you're being called in to drop a urine sample. I've given 148 urine samples.
Whoa.
in the last 24 months.
Would have been given a sample as I was standing in front of that judge.
Yeah.
I would, my pants would be wet.
He looked me in the face and said, if I ever see you here again, I'm going to put you in prison for 15 years, is what he said.
So you absolutely know if you do this again, you're going to prison.
Oh, no. It's no doubt.
Well, do you ever take a drink even?
No, I don't. I'm still on probation.
Know you're not going anywhere.
I still have to call this drop line every day. I'm still on the probation part of this program
So they don't want any alcohol in your system.
Correct. That's correct.
I want to underscore that program. My buddy John Newsham, who's a lawyer in St. Louis.
I know John.
Okay. He was very instrumental, Frank, in creating this program. And if mm-hmm. there's one thing that needs to be addressed, not just legal or as a criminal justice issue, but a health issue, and that's addiction. And I don't think it would be a stretch to say that Tim is struggling with a alcohol addiction. And part of your recovery is to share the story. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't probably talk too much about it when you go to these AA meetings and stuff, but it's not a it, it's not a mistake or it's not a coincidence that he just got four DWIs. You've had an issue with alcohol that you're dealing with. And that's really important to not bury people either that struggle with alcohol or drugs. And I rip on St. Charles County a lot, but they have one of the best drug treatment programs in the United States. It's a program that people come from all over the country to watch and put into their courts. The courts have now become the place that is saddled not only with punishment, which is an important thing for the court system, but it also has been saddled with health addiction problems. So hats off to not just Newsom and these other judges and or these other lawyers and judges, but to people like Tim that show that prove that this program is important and it works. And he's much more valuable, not just to this program, but to society for being in this room than being in some cage somewhere. And so congratulations to you on dealing with that.
It was very difficult. I mean, when you talk about going through a program, I mean, most people don't even realize what that means. I mean, you are in this program that I went through, you are without a driver's license for 6 months. Right. You have to hire a professional driver to drive you around. If you get caught driving, it is 30 days in jail.
And that in itself is embarrassing.
It was $1,000 a month just to go. I don't know how people who struggle financially do it, really, because, I mean, I was very fortunate to be in
this position. You can't get to work. You could lose your job.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, you know, you had to go to AA meetings every week. You had to go to counseling sessions every week. You had to go in front of the judge every Friday.
Every Friday, you have to be in front of a judge. Right. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, we still do that now?
No, because I'm out of the program. Okay. I'm on the probation part of the program.
How long is it?
It's a 15-month program. It's a 15-month program that you're in which you have to call a drop line every day to determine whether you have to provide a sample, which they can then detect whether or not there's any alcohol in your system.
But that's the program? You just a phone call?
No. That's just one part of it.
Okay.
I actually put a whole spreadsheet together of all this other stuff. But you have to go to two separate two-hour counseling sessions every week. You have to go to an individual counseling session every week. You have to report into a PO every week. You have to go see a judge every Friday with a group of people. I mean, it was literally like you were doing something every day for 15 months.
Yeah. And don't you have to pay for the counseling?
Oh, yeah.
Would this happen to somebody who had three DWIs?
Yeah, three's a felony in Missouri. Okay. So there was people in the program that had three or four or even more. I was fortunate enough to get through this program and to make a deal with the prosecutor, which is pretty standard for most of the people in the program, in which the felony charge was removed. And I repled essentially to a misdemeanor. So technically, I mean, I could have come. Technically, I was only charged as a third offender. If anybody were to look me up, but I mean, I'll be honest with you, it was more than that. So that was the big thing with me being a licensed private investigator, was to keep that felony off my record and be able to maintain my business license. And that's why a lot of people went through it, was to maintain that, because your other option was jail. If I had not taken this issue, they would have given me 7 years,
Tim,
and I would have served at least 4 to 6 months of that at minimum.
How do you qualify? Not that we want people to go out and get DWIs, but for people that still struggle with alcohol, we want them to get help. But for people that are out there, how did you qualify as a four-time DWI person, whether it's three or four? There are people that in the old days, they get 20. But now that they've really cracked down on this and three becomes a felony, how did you qualify to get into the DWI court program?
You have to be screened. Not everybody that gets three or four DUIs or more is automatically welcomed into this program. First of all, you can't have been convicted of a felony for anything else you've ever done. Secondly, you can't have had hurt anybody in any of your DUI arrests. Thirdly, you had to show proof of employment throughout the entire thing. You can't just be a bum and not work and that kind of thing. You have to show that you're either a full time student or full time employment. So there was and those are three that come top of mind. But there was a whole list of about 10 criteria that my attorney advised me that I qualified for. Then you have to apply to even be admitted into the program. And so, right now there's probably about, I think the entire time I was in the program, there was at least 150 people that were actively involved in the program at all times. So, a couple would graduate and then more would replee in. There was always about 150, 200 people that were constantly churning through the DUI court program here in St.
Louis. It's actually a big business now where the courts will appoint. Mm-hmm. My sister was a probation officer for 20 years in the city, and now she's a drug and alcohol counselor at one of those facilities. That actually she gets court-appointed DUI people, and she has to counsel them and work with them. And there are some that she can look at and say, you're not going to make it through.
And there are people that went through this program who would mess up, and you would get, and the judge would send them to prison. They're like, you know, if you if you tested positive constantly, you know, at the drop lab, or if you missed appointments with the counselors or with your PO or with, you know, with the judge or AA meetings, that kind of, they didn't take any prisoners at this thing. I mean, they sent guys to prison in the middle of this program. They would kick them out of the program. So
yeah,
I mean,
the counselors would have a lot of say in that too. They would contact the courts and. That's it.
This is one thing that I really never have to worry about. I drink so little, almost none, that I never am worried about being pulled over against the DWI.
Right.
But for people, social drinkers on a regular basis, I'm telling you, every night there are hundreds of people that if they got pulled over would be over the limit.
Oh, absolutely.
And the whole reason this came up was because this outrage over guns when – the combination of alcohol and cars has killed 120 people since that shooting Sunday night. 120, not 59, 120. And nobody even talks about it. It's just amazing to me.
I'll be honest with you. I almost didn't take this job because I was offered this job and I knew this day would come, that this would be talked about.
But this is a good day, and I'm going to tell you why. I don't look at you in any way and think, what a piece of crap and what a scumbag, because I can tell by looking at you, you really are very ashamed of this and embarrassed. And this is actually good therapy for you. It is. I believe that.
I hope it is, because I want everybody that's out there that hasn't been caught but has gone to the ballpark. This is a sports show.
And by the way, I'm going to
there's 10,000 people a night.
The only difference between Tim and those people is – He got caught 4 times, and I promise you, those people, had they been pulled over more than 4 times, they would have been in the situation.
When I drank, I did it. I don't drink anymore, and it's not because I can't, but because I just don't like it. It tastes bad, and it makes me act like a fool, even more of a fool than I usually am. But for the 10,000 people a night that are drinking too much and getting behind the wheel, you're not better than anybody that's been caught and in the system. Just because you're not on CaseNet doesn't mean you either, A, don't have a problem, or, B, could not get in a lot of
trouble.
You've
just been lucky so far.
And this is important for people also out there that want to know that not just a regular guy, but a really good guy like Tim has gone into this world and has come out of it and is coming out of it as a success.
And not once did you act like a victim or say that you were unfairly, not once. Mm-mm. This is why, not only now that I know this, when I go, I don't want this guy on the show, I actually want you to hear more, because I think what you're doing now is going to help a lot of people and let them know they do not want to ever end up like you ended up. 9 years left to blow into that thing to start your car.
That's $100 a month, too. I mean, it's a...
What, do you rent it?
Well, yeah, you have to rent the device, then you have to pay to get it calibrated every month as well. So it's $1,200 a year. So over a 10-year period, that's $12,000 just to have the right to drive a car. Before I put one tank of gas, before I buy $1 of insurance, before I make one repair.
Now, I got to be careful here. Somebody in my family that had this, and he was a pretty smart kid. And he found a way to rig it so he didn't have to, even if he'd been drinking, the car would start. I would imagine that if they catch you doing that, you go right to prison.
There's a camera in there. There's a camera in there that's connected with this device that's connected to the state of Missouri.
This gets better.
They take a picture of me. Every time I get in the vehicle, you have to blow it to start it. Then you have to blow it again at the 5-minute mark. Then you have to blow it again randomly about every 30 minutes. And every time that happens, they take a picture of you to make sure that you're the one that's blown into it and it's not somebody in the passenger seat while you're driving, that type of thing. And, you know, it's a violation of your probation, the terms of your arrangement with the court if you do that. And they don't, Frank, I can't accent this any more than I can say it calmly. They throw you to prison.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to jail. Don't pass go. It's to jail if you screw up and try and cheat these people. And so it's, I mean, they keep you on your toes.
What was it like the night that you got pulled over for your fourth DWI? Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. My family was in town my family split, and so I have 3 siblings on my father's side, and they were all in town for their maternal grandmother's birthday. And I live in Eureka, and we went out to Wentzville, and there was a Blues hockey game on that night. It was a playoff game. Mike Yeo was coaching the Wild at the time, the Blues in that series, as I recall, and they lost that game that night. And I knew I'd had too much. And I went to a gas station next door and drank a big bottle of water and sat there for about 45 minutes and thought, you know what? I'm not even going to risk this. I've already had three. I tried to call a cab, couldn't get one to come out there. Uber was not around yet at the time. This was in April of 15. And I was in a big, large company vehicle, and I said, to heck with it. So I said, I think I'm good. And I drove down the highway, and it was a windy night. I was in a van, and it was a windy night, and the wind took my vehicle a little bit across the line. And the officer pulled me over, and that was all she wrote.
Did you know right then that this was going to be a very bad situation?
No, I thought I was okay. I thought I could pass the test, the field sobriety test, which I did.
What was the sobriety test? What did they make you do?
Oh, well, you know, they make you stand on one leg, and then they make you hold your arms out, and they shine a flashlight in your eyes.
I can't do the one leg thing anymore, and I'm sober. Right. My balance, it's changed.
Mm-hmm. Tim did it three times, and he couldn't do it.
Well, we're going to break. We're going to take a break. And I would apologize to all the people who can't listen on the app or online, but they can't hear me apologize. So there's no point in doing that. But we do have to go on with business as usual, take a break.
It's up on Facebook, though, so people know what's
good.
Going on.
And then when we do come back, we'll pick this up and talk about this and maybe a couple other things because we have Scott Sherman with us. And maybe we'll take a couple of simulated phone calls for Scott.
Hmm.
And to the advertisers, I will, the ones who are being heard by a partial audience, we'll make that up to them, like MD Health and Wellness. MD Health and Wellness is, it's a couple of doctors who decided they liked a thing called Dr. Emma's HCG diet. Now, I'm not going to go into what that is. You can go on their website and learn more about it, but it works. Yeah, it worked for me. I lost 35 pounds. Yes, every once in a while, like now because of this place next door that serves candied bacon, I pick up 7 or 8 pounds and I have to lose it again. We got to do something about this. I got to ask the owners to take that thing off the menu. Candied bacon.
How about a breathalyzer?
Don't you dare do such a thing.
A bacon breathalyzer.
A baconizer.
And if you blow into it and you smell like bacon, your car won't start. I'm like the idea guy. Right, Limey?
You are.
Great idea, mate. Thank you.
I think what they should do probably is give you a different menu with that off of
That's
the
That's a good idea, too. Yeah. In other words, like when you tell the casino you don't want to be admitted, you put yourself on that list so you can't gamble. I'm on the no bacon list.
Yeah.
And if I'm caught ordering candied bacon next door, I can't ever come in there again. That's something like that. But it's actually, it's a good test for me to see if I can go on and live life the way that the folks at MD Health and Wellness told me to live it, and that is watch the calories. When I was a kid, I remember all of the, they called it reduction. Oh, she's reducing. It means she's losing weight. They don't use that anymore, but that's what they used to say. Would you like to reduce? And then there were products like MetriCal. It was all about calories. That has not changed. Any doctor will tell you, you can run all you want to, do all the push-ups you want to, you can do the no-carb, whatever. Calories, calories, calories. If you watch the calorie intake, you won't gain weight. If you cut it down, you'll lose weight. That's it. But it's not easy to do by yourself. They have a way. They have a great way to get you started, get you through that first month or two. And that really is the toughest part. It's MD Health and Wellness. Ask them or go on the site, their website. I'll give it to you in a minute. And check out this lipo melt. It's not liposuction. It's lipo melt. And I've now heard from people since they started it in August who've had enough of the sessions that they tell me they've lost inches, lots of inches. Sometimes when you lose weight, you still have that turkey neck stuff or that underarm flab fat or whatever. That's what this is all about, lipo melt. So check it out, too. The website is mdhealthwellness.com. All the people who are trying to listen on the app, but right now, here's exactly what they're thinking.
What the hell?
Yeah, well, Charter. They're out. It's out. Internet's out. Those of you listening on traditional AM radio, hey, lucky you. It is a Thursday, and every Thursday we take calls for Scott Sherman, legal stuff. But we can't take calls because we're bundled, and our phone service here is through Charter. We can't take any phone calls. But that's okay because those of you who are listening are learning a lot about DWIs, and at a certain point that if you have three or what I think it's three, then you're a felon and you don't want to get there. You don't want to be that person. Now, I've never had one. What's the difference between I've never understood it. DUI and DWI. What's the difference?
It's just a term of art. Sometimes in different states, if you're operating a different kind
of
vehicle.
You said it's just a term, art. My name is not art. Is that what you said?
Term of
art opinion.
You said art. It's just a term.
My
art.
Apologies.
No, sorry. Go ahead.
it really doesn't matter. If you're operating under the influence or you're driving while intoxicated, sometimes a boating case will be considered operating under the influence, or it's just something that is a
nomenclature. But there has to be a reason that some people are charged with DUI and some DWI.
Well, it could be a DUI could be for something other than alcohol. Driving under the influence could be an influence on meth or drugs,
PCP.
Like Tiger Woods, you know, when he got his, he wasn't necessarily given a DUI for alcohol, is because he was on all the pills he was on.
You're only intoxicated if it's alcohol, right?
That's what intoxication means.
That's the only
means.
Time. Okay. So the DUI can be anything. All right. While Scott's here, since we can't take calls, Limey, is there anything legal in your life that you have a question about? Probably not. How old are you?
I'm 32.
Yeah, at 32, you probably haven't had enough happen to you that you have to worry about legal issues. Am I right about that?
Yeah, you are. You are pretty correct.
All right. Dan, I'm not even going to ask.
We only have another half hour.
Yeah, I mean, if Dan got started, I'm not kidding. Dan could help a lot of people just by telling them everything he's been. We've said this before, and you don't mind if we do.
I do have a question.
What?
I do have a question, which could be with Dan's brake lights, right? Say if you've got both your brake lights out, you don't know it, and somebody rear ends you. Now, typically, if somebody rear ends you, it's their fault because it's always the person, like, you know, you pay attention. But if your brake lights don't work, are you at fault?
I can answer this. No. If their brake lights don't work, right, Scott, you're not at fault for rear-ending them.
Pretty much. I mean, Missouri has this doctrine called the highest degree of care, which you have to use while you're driving.
Right.
And the rear-end collision doctrine is the presumption that the car trailing that hits the car in front of it is at fault. But you can overcome that with a really good reason. Like, the idiot didn't have working brake lights and it was at night.
Right.
Now, if it's at noon, you could probably have a difficult time arguing that you weren't paying close enough attention.
Right.
But if you're having that kind of issue where your indicator that you're stopping doesn't work, that's a pretty good excuse for hitting somebody from behind.
It's actually too bad that the app isn't working, because we may have to repeat some of this for people later, because Dan, if you don't mind, you've got a son. No, I didn't know where to start. You have a son.
Well, I have a son. I also had a brother.
You have a brother who's dead, who's killed by the police, mm-hmm. Shot and killed because he wanted to be. No, suicide by cop. He wanted to be shot. Yeah. But your son got on heroin. Mm-hmm. And I remember the day you told me the story about he had an accident and you got the insurance check for the car. And you said to him, we need to go out shopping for a car with that money. And he said, that money is gone. He used it to buy heroin, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that the first time you knew he was on it?
Probably, yes. I think
was so. It like $7,000 or something?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that a lot of heroin? I don't know what heroin costs. That's a lot of heroin.
That's a lot of heroin.
Yeah.
Well, you sound like you know a lot of heroin.
I know quite a bit about drugs.
Also, you do?
I do.
Why? How do you know?
Well, both of my parents were addicts of pretty much everything under the sun. And I've also been to quite a few Alateen meetings.
Because
they
have relatives go mm-hmm. to these. No kidding.
Yeah. Oh, I highly recommend.
12-step program. I got you. What
if you have an addict, anything in your family, a drug addict, an alcoholic, or anything, I highly recommend Al-Anon mm-hmm. or
if you're under the Nar-Anon. Age of there's Narcotics Anonymous or NA if you're like, you know, prescription pills, heroin, things like that. But yeah, what he was talking about, Al-Anon, Alateen, there are lots of groups out there that can help support people who have family members that are addicts.
So, mm-hmm. so in Dan's case, you have four kids.
Yes.
As far as you know, because this is the oldest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other, Alyssa no problem.
Is not, no problem. No, and Alyssa is.
What about
with,
the other boys, though? Generally, brothers look up to their older brother. Have they gotten caught up in any of this crap?
No. Well, Alyssa has a different mother. The boys actually have a mother that is the spawn of Satan, and I'm. It is.
That's true, actually.
Scott knows. Scott knows her a little bit. But she's actually helped.
She's actually on the way. Here's what she's actually on the way here with a shotgun. Well, after you said that, to come here and take us all out.
No, with goat's blood.
So I just want to talk. Look, I have three kids. Okay, a lot of people. When was the first time you knew that he was using heroin?
Boy.
What were the circumstances? Did he come to you? Did you have to go to the police station or hospital or what happened?
No, I am trying to, I'm trying to remember and trying to think when I suspected something was going on.
But he's been in jail, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's been in the 120 program.
What does that mean?
Which is you go into 120 treatment, which is a part of the prison.
120 days in 120 prison days. Behind the walls.
Like
for
a shock, like a shot.
That's what but it's a treatment center in the prison. You're not in general population. You're actually in a center where it's treatment, but that's court ordered. You go in there and you have to go through counseling, and you can't leave. You can't do anything. You are there with them.
It's called choices.
Yeah.
And let me tell you what an epidemic this is, because you did mention, Frank, about the Las Vegas shooting, and you know it's 59 people, and it's horrible, and it's tragic, and it's disgraceful, and it's terrifying. More people have died of drug overdoses since that happened than died in that shooting. We are almost at 60,000 people a year that are going to die of these drug overdoses.
The difference is they're not killing other people.
Well, no, but they are
dealers.
Well, here a perfect example is. Is this guy that they're glorifying, Anthony, whatever the hell his name is.
Right.
Yeah, the guy that is a known felon heroin dealer, and now because he was shot by a police officer, how many...
Oh, is this the one that the verdict just came down?
Okay. Yeah. How many people did he have a hand in killing?
Yeah.
Because they overdosed, or because, and this is a big thing now... Heroin, they are cutting heroin with fentanyl, and that's deadly.
It's very deadly.
But see, all these protesters know is that a cop shot this guy. They don't stop to think that the world is better off without him.
No,
okay, much better off.
Oh,
well, most dealers now, if somebody actually has a or dies from a drug overdose, there are a lot of cases now. And I think the last one I heard about was that in St. Charles. That the police, if they find the dealer, they will actually charge them with manslaughter or something. I don't remember the charge, but they get, they are going to jail. They get blamed for the death.
Tim Lomar, who's the county prosecutor in St. Charles, is a terrific guy. And he is charging the people that are supplying the death sentence to some very sick people. I mean, heroin addicts are ill. The mental illness and also the addiction itself is an illness. But you mentioned about the protesters and about the recent decision on that case. They also and very few people, I just throw this there, know the law and what the ability of police officers to use deadly force is. And it's really important for people to understand that if a police officer senses that suspect is creating a serious risk of death or great bodily injury to the public, to that police officer, then deadly force can be used. And this goes back almost 30 years. And there was a case in Florida which really has spelled it out. You look at it in the sense of that officer in that particular situation. And that case, time and again, has not just been upheld, but been upheld more than 5-4 by the Supreme Court. The last one was 8-1, or 9-0. Some of them are 8-1, where police officers have used deadly force in high-speed chases, and not just the justification, but the law is that if that suspect in that high-speed chase is considered a great risk of death or bodily harm, deadly force can be used. And you're talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg deciding that. And you're talking about Stephen Breyer deciding that. These people that they call liberals on the court. And time and again, they have sided on the side of the law officer, using that officer's discretion to say this person was a danger to the public and deadly force was used. So if folks took some time and energy, and
But they won't.
I'm a huge First Amendment person.
Yeah.
Take some of the time to read the cases.
No, they're not interested in that.
It's a shame because we are moving further and further away from one another, and we're not talking to each other. And these problems could, if not get solved, certainly it could be solved in a much better way.
I'm getting indications from Woody there that
streaming is back on and the internet is back on. I think we should just be minutes away from TV and phones.
Whoa.
So that's big. Well, this is good news.
Breaking news. You got a breaking news song by
there's got to be something. It's in there somewhere.
I'll just imitate it.
Type in news or update.
Streaming is back on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good deal.
And a quick note while we're waiting for phones, you talk about guns, and certainly this is on the mind of everybody.
Can I just quickly say, all of you now listening on the app, man, I wish you could have been listening. We said every filthy word.
Oh, man.
That, just to test to see if the app was right. All the dirty words. We said them all. You
the
missed
best
them.
Of Carlin.
Yeah, you missed them. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
About 9 years ago, there were two Supreme Court cases that finally fleshed out that the Second Amendment is a real thing. And is a fundamental constitutional right, not only in the federal level, but also to the states. The Heller case and also the McDonald case, Heller versus D.C., City of Chicago versus McDonald. It is very difficult when you have a fundamental constitutional right for Congress or state legislatures to ban those things. So the Second Amendment is real, and for people that don't like it, it's kind of too bad, but they are fundamental rights. They are not without restriction in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
Those restrictions, because these are baby rights, they've been litigating First Amendment stuff for over 100 years. We don't know what those limits are. So for people to say that there should be banned, that's wrong and will never happen. And for people to say that there's absolutely no limitations whatsoever, that's also wrong and should never happen. And Missouri did one that we talked about last year, where you could get a concealed carry permit with having no training whatsoever.
Yeah, that I'm a gun person. That's stupid.
And there are things that will be put to the courts and put to these legislatures, but there should never be a question. The more fundamental constitutional rights you have, whether you choose to use them or not, the better your society is. So for everybody out there, it is settled. There's a Second Amendment. What are the restrictions and limits on it? We don't know because it's really new. Yeah. I'm not going to state what I think that they should be or not. I'm just here to tell you, the idea is for those rights to be respected, acknowledged, and then in some way for us to figure out where the limits are. Well, but there's no way that banning guns is either constitutional or B, smart.
Yeah, we're going to take a break, and hopefully we go, whoa, look, our Charter TV monitor just came back on. Well, way to go, Charter. What'd they take it out?
And we've got the internet again. Yeah.
Hour and a half.
And the Kentucky governor said, we do have gun laws. It's called murder. If you use a gun to kill someone, it's murder.
All right, when we come back, we actually might be able to take a call or two for Scott Sherman. Is it out again?
The phone's not back. Well, you know
it was on for like 3 seconds.
Well, here's one of those deals is where you know how the power does that sometimes? Yeah. Power goes, and then they're connecting, reconnecting. And
thank you. Well, Dan, you know a lot about the internet.
Well, yeah. I know.
That's high-tech talk.
Yeah.
Connecting, reconnecting. We're going to take a break. We come back. Maybe this stuff will be working. Maybe it won't. We'll just go on anyway. We'll pretend it is, and those of you who can listen, that's lots of you, because the truth is... there are a lot of people that just listen to the regular AM radio. I have to take an opportunity here to talk to everybody who has $25,000 or more. Now, if you're listening and you don't have that, I hope that someday you do. I hope you see the day. And I forgot what the number is, but it's something like the average adult in this country, and it's a shocking number. It's like 65% of people couldn't come up with $5,000 if they had to. And I mean, that's people 50, 60, that's adults. So your goal probably should be to try to accumulate $25,000, because when you hit that mark at $25,000 or more, then you can sit down and have a meeting. And I don't know why I said sit down. I hate that. Of course you could sit down. You can have a stand-up meeting. I'm sorry I did that, because I don't like it when I hear it. Oh, you can sit down and you can have a meeting with Mark and Jason. That's Mark Reardon and Jason Becker. They were Stiefel Nicholas. Stiefel's a member of the SI. What is it, Dan? The SIPC. And the NYSE. Yeah. And it's a name that everybody knows, a good, solid company. And Mark Reardon and Jason Becker have been doing what they're doing for a long time. They're financial advisors. Look. There's no law that says you have to get financial. There's no law that says you have to get legal advice from people like Scott Sherman. You just have to be smart enough to seek it out. And most people realize we don't know. We, who aren't financial people, we don't know all of the loopholes and the taxes and the legal things you can do to not pay as much tax as you. Most people overpay in income tax. We also don't know what's out there to invest in. What's conservative and what's not quite as conservative. Take a little more risk, a little more gain if it hits and all that stuff. But they'll take a look at what you have and what you're doing with it, and they'll assess it, and they'll give you their opinion. And that's all it is. It's their advice. You can take it or not take it. But the meeting is complimentary. And there's nobody that can say it's a bad idea, even if you have an advisor, to get a second opinion. How can that be a bad idea? So here's where you go. MarkandJason.com. Now, where did you get that music?
Off the internet.
Is it back up?
Yeah. The internet's back up.
Okay, so we have internet. We don't have phones. And we don't have the app yet, right?
No.
All right.
So the app's back up.
Now the app is up.
Yeah, we have the app and online streaming. That's up. The phones are not working right now.
All right. Well, if they were working and we took a call, probably go something like this. Hi, you're on the air. Who is this, please?
This is Doug.
Doug, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Can I talk to Scott Sherwood for a second?
Sure. Scott's Doug on the phone.
Hi, Doug. How are you?
I'm doing all right. My wife is seeing another guy, and I caught him. And I killed him. I shot him. I shot him. Just shot him right in the head and killed him. Do I go to jail for that?
If you keep talking about it, yes.
I'm talking about Lake Ozarks, because then in the middle of the channel out there, it's like 100 feet deep. I dropped him with some concrete, and nobody liked him, and nobody even cared about him, so nobody's even asked about him. So I think, to me at least, if you take a person out that's not contributing a damn thing to society and is a scumbag, I don't think you should be punished for that.
Wait, could I do that to my ex-wife? That just described her.
Who are you? I'm talking to Scott. Who the hell are you? Who are you?
No, I'm sorry.
Mr. Budinsky? Yeah. I'm not talking to you.
My name's not Bud.
I'll call another station where somebody doesn't butt in. Goodbye.
Thanks a lot, Dan. We lost our call.
Oh, man. Sorry.
You're touching on something that really did happen. I mean, you almost... That story.
Oh,
that
Cape Girardeau thing.
This is unbelievable.
No, I wasn't familiar with it. Tell him about this, Scott. You know about this?
Is this the guy in the silo? Is this the guy in the silo?
No, okay. James Clay Waller is a man who was convicted of killing his wife down in the Cape Girardeau area, but they could never find her body, and so they never charged him. But they were on him. They were on him. They were on him. They were on him. They finally gave him a deal. They said, "Look, lead us to her body. We'll only give you 20 years."
He was arrested.
He was arrested
for killing his wife,
and they gave him a deal, saying, okay, you know, her family wants closure. You know, we're never going to find her body.
Okay. Based on what was the basis for them accusing him?
I don't recall those exact specifics, but I know that, you know, there was children involved. She had caught him cheating. There may have been some life insurance. I'm not really sure.
But there are enough things that all signs pointed to this guy.
No one else had motive. She was getting ready to leave him. Right. So I mean. Anywho, they offered him a deal in which they said, we'll only give you 20 years if you lead us to her body for murder.
That's a pretty good
murder. Because murder is life without parole.
How old is this guy?
He's probably in his late 40s or 50s. You know, he's in that area.
He could live 20 more years to get out.
So he took the deal, and he got the 20 years. And he got him and the law enforcement, they got in a boat, and they went out to the middle of the Mississippi River.
Oh, so what I just made up actually happened.
Yeah, that's the whole reason I'm bringing this up. So he takes him out to an island on the Mississippi River, down by Cape Girardeau, right, and he leads them to their body. And they dig her up, and they find her, and he gets to 20 years. Well, then this guy goes to prison, a state prison in Missouri, and he writes a book about it. He writes a tell-all book about it, about what all went down and who his girlfriends were and what happened and why this all went down. He even ratted his own girlfriends out, you know, whatever. So anyway, the federal government
so
says...
Sorry. Oh, he missed it again. We get three more of those, you're out.
Yeah, I was about to say, he said anywho. Do I still get played anyway if that happens?
No, that's not anyway. But okay, he also said anyway, and you didn't catch it. You got three more left. I'm telling
three
you.
More.
Three more. That's it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So real quick, I'll wrap this up real quick. So the federal government steps in. They say, yeah, we don't like this whole 20 years for murder deal. We think maybe we're going to try and find out something else to charge you with. So they realized that the island that he took the police to discover his wife's body in the middle of the Mississippi River, it was on the Illinois side of the river.
Kidnapping.
It was actually, the charge was interstate domestic violence. And under federal statute, you can get up to 35 years for that, and that's what he got today. He went to prison thinking he's only going to get to 20 years for leaving the body. Goodness. But when the federal government realized that he had hit him on the island was on the Illinois side of the river.
Why didn't he just drop her in the water?
I don't think he realized where he was. That's the whole thing. I don't think he realized.
But even if he had, he probably wasn't aware of that law.
Well, nobody would ever go to this island. The water, the body could float up or goes to the side, or, you know, some fishermen find it or whatever. But if you actually go to an island and dig a hole and bury it there, who's ever going to find that?
When did he make the deal?
A couple years ago.
Was it during the trial, or were they still investigating?
There was no trial. It was just a pre-trial deal.
Here's the thing. No one is shy about charging for murder. Mm-hmm. So if they haven't charged him for murder yet, they don't have their case. Although the statute of limitations, there is none on murder.
There's no body.
So there's no body. They're not charging him. A lawyer in his right mind would, A, make that deal for his client that wasn't charged with anything, and B, not get the transactional immunity from the other system, the federal system, to make sure they didn't backdoor him.
So he was stupid for even taking the 20-year deal.
Yes, he was stupid for doing this. He's a murderer, and he's an idiot.
But they couldn't have proved it.
If they could have proved it, they would have charged him. Remember where Cape Girardeau is and who runs Cape Girardeau.
So they didn't charge him?
No. If what Tim's telling me is correct.
They just went to him and said, we're pretty sure you killed her.
We think, do the right thing.
And he was an idiot.
They may have charged him. I'll have to look it
idiot.
Up.
If he wasn't in the middle of that trial, that's a terrible deal.
Yeah. Well, it turned out to be even more terrible.
That's right. And that's always something that people.
He got more time in prison for moving the body than he did for killing the body.
Right.
That's what it all boils down to.
Wow.
That's what's amazing.
So
to
he's
me.
Got a total of 55
no,
years.
No, they're letting him run concurrently. So the 35 runs with the 20. So when he gets done with Missouri, he's got to go do 15 more federal.
Oh, it's going to run consecutive.
Right. But the other thing is that this guy wrote a book, and the judge today, as part of his deal, said, all the money that you've made writing this book from prison, we're taking it.
Yeah, that's a pretty standard thing where you're not allowed to profit off of the crime that you committed.
Who gets the money?
It might go to the victim or some victim's trust fund.
Dead. I wonder what she'd buy with
she
it.
She might have kids. Yeah. That goes into her estate or to a victim's trust fund. So I would guess that it's not going to him, but it might be directed to innocent sort of descendants of her estate, if kids or parents or siblings or something like that.
It's really fascinating. You know, I remember one time when I was working as a private investigator, as you know, and there was a guy who was stalking women in a shopping mall.
Right.
And he was taking his cell phone, and he was like putting it under their skirt when they were like looking at clothes and stuff.
That's the name for that, upskirt photography.
Right, exactly. There's people that specialize in that.
That's right.
You know, as long with consent, I might add. So anyway, this guy gets caught by store security, and he runs out the door, and there's a cop that's there at the door. He picks up a sign where they're announcing the sale. He hits the cop with the sign. Okay, so he's already taken a picture of this gal under her skirt. Now police have told him stop, so he's fleeing and evading police. Now he assaults a police officer, right? So he gets through the police officer. There was double doors at this mall. He gets through the police officer, and he gets out to the parking lot, and the cops are chasing him. He takes the cell phone he was taking the pictures with. He throws it on the ground. He stomps on it. Now, of those four things that he did, voyeurism, fleeing and evading police, assaulting a police officer, or stomping on a cell phone, guess which carries the most serious charge?
Stomping the cell phone?
The destruction of the evidence.
That's the only felony he did, was destroying the cell phone. That was the only felony out of all that I just described.
So if he had left the pictures on there, he'd have been better off.
If he'd have just like dropped the phone on the ground and left it there, no felonies.
Now, how do they know it's evidence if the phone is stomped and destroyed? They can still retrieve, right?
Well, the charge was that he was using the cell phone to invade the privacy of these people. That is part of, in fact, the essence of the case.
In fact, it was close to that. It's a term that's similar to invasion of privacy. It's invasion of privates. See? Thanks,
good, yeah.
Yeah. Real thanks. Quick, with one just the difference between the state and the federal system.
You have a minute, which should be plenty. Go ahead. No, you do. Here's a minute. Go ahead.
In the Hornbeck case, the Sean Hornbeck case that I represented him and his family on, the federal government, the U.S. Attorney's Office, had a lot of federal charges. They had the child pornography and a whole kidnapping and a whole host of things. Having them involved in that case helped make the deal where that scumbag pled guilty and got over 400 years in state prison, and they were waiting for him in case they got a lesser sentence, and they were going to come after him with that. So the feds are always the great insurance policy on somebody like either that scumbag or this guy down in Cape.
Well, all that news about finding him, that was all fake news because Sylvia Brown said he was dead.
Oh, that's right.
And she was an accomplished,
her.
Credible psychic.
I think your son is dead.
That's her right there. That's the recording.
I'm just glad she's dead. Right.
We're going to break, do some stuff. Before you know it, the Playhouse will be here. You're listening to, some of you, listening to 590 The Fan.